Well, please turn with me now in the Word of God to the Old Testament once again, but this time to the book of Exodus and chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20. And I want us to spend some time just now thinking together about the fifth of the Ten Commandments that the Lord gave to Israel at Mount Sinai. And we have it there recorded for us in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 12. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. The code of our church recommends that on the occasion of a baptism, the minister should preach on a topic that relates to the family, amongst other things. And as we think about that subject, there is probably no text in all of Scripture that is more fundamental than this one. Honor your father and your mother. And so I want to remind you, I assume that that's what I'm doing this morning, I'm not trying to persuade you, but to remind you of the crucial role of fathers and mothers in the family. And that's something that is really important, not just for parents to understand, but for children to understand as well. And so I want us to think this morning about the importance of this commandment. And perhaps there has never been a time in all human history when we have more urgently needed to hear and to heed the fifth commandment than at the beginning of the 21st century. Time magazine, in an article that it ran in the 1970s, predicted that the traditional family would be extinct by the year 2000. It would no longer be needed. It would no longer be there. Well, that hasn't quite happened, but it isn't hard to imagine it happening in the near future. One out of every three marriages in the United Kingdom now end in divorce. It's the highest divorce rate in all of Europe. More than 50% of young people choose to live together rather than to get married. And there is no sign of that trend reversing. The government, of course, is making matters worse. They're throwing petrol on the flames by its iniquitous policies. No-fault divorce, which will enable people to break their marriage covenant more easily than they're able to break their mobile phone contracts, is an imminent reality. Same-sex marriage, of course, it seems like it's only a matter of time before it's introduced here in Northern Ireland, just as it has been in the rest of the United Kingdom. Civil partnerships for heterosexuals, a ban on smacking children in Scotland and Wales, all of these things are imminent realities. All of these things are decay that is eating away at the family. The family is a despised structure. It's obvious to see the family being undermined in these ways that I've mentioned, but for years it's been going on in more subtle ways, and perhaps we've been brainwashed. A whole generation has grown up that has been brainwashed to have contempt for the family as God instituted and designed it. Television programs, not just soap operas, which it's hard to imagine any decent Christian watching, but children's programs as well, consistently portray the traditional God-given family structure as something that's boring, something that is old-fashioned. Programs that encourage, by example, children to rebel against their parents, to speak against their parents without respect, to sneak around behind their parents' backs. The message that these programs for generations, well, for years have been sending out is that parents are just an annoying cause of frustration and embarrassment to their children. Parents are people who are going to spoil your life, who are going to get in your way, who are going to mess up things for you. And perhaps without realizing it, our children have taken that on board. And they have begun to believe it. And it comes out in the way that they speak. You see it in the way that they think and behave. Well, over against all of this, the fifth commandment shows us that God's view of the family could not be more different. So I want us to look at this topic this morning under three simple headings. First of all, let's think about the priority of the commandment. The priority of the commandment. The fifth commandment, as you probably know, is the first of the ten commandments that relates to other human beings. Commandments 1-4 have to do with our duty to God, and commandments 5-10 about our duty to human beings. So this one, the fifth, is the first that relates to other human beings. Now, I don't know about you, but perhaps that seems a little bit strange to us. If it was left to you or to me to arrange these six commandments in order of importance, I wonder how many of us would put this one first. I think perhaps most of us would probably think do not murder or do not commit adultery should have first place. Surely those commands ought to take priority over honouring your mum and dad. And yet that's not the order that God has given. The infinitely wise God has put this commandment first when he begins to instruct us about our duty to others. And it's worth asking the question, why? Why does God put this one first? What's the explanation for the priority of the fifth commandment? And surely one important reason is because every single person, without exception, has a mother and a father. The relationship between a child and his or her parents is the only relationship that's true of everyone. We don't all have brothers and sisters. We don't all have wives or husbands. We don't all have sons or daughters. We don't all have cousins and so on. But everyone, without exception, has a mother and a father. And for that reason, the family is the basic building block of society. This is something that didn't used to be controversial. It used to be taken for granted. In 1948, the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights said this: the family is the natural and fundamental group unit of society. Now, that fact has been greatly obscured and is disputed and is in danger of being lost today, but it doesn't make it any less true, does it? And if we tamper with this foundational unit of society, then it's only a matter of time before the whole structure comes crashing down to the ground. If we go wrong in our families, then we can't help but go wrong in the whole of society. And the reverse of that is also true. If we build strong family lives, then many, if not most, of all the other evils that we see in society will cease to be such a big problem. Because when you think about it, someone who has learned to honour authority and to respect other people in their home growing up is much less likely to fail to respect authority outside the home. They're much less likely to commit murder or adultery or theft or to lie. If they've learned to honour their parents growing up in the home as children, then there's a very good chance that they will do all the other things which flow from our responsibility to our parents. And on the other hand, if someone can't even honour and obey and respect their own parents, this man and this woman who love them and care for them more than anyone in the whole world, if they can't even honour and respect and obey them, then what chance is there that they're going to honour and respect anyone, let alone a complete stranger who has no call or influence over them whatsoever? The home, you see, is the first contact that we have with authority. We're born into a world of authority, and we need to learn as soon as possible what that means, what it involves, and how to submit to that authority. And if children don't submit to their parents' authority, there is very, very little chance that they're going to submit to anyone else's. So you see, stable, obedient, respectful families produce stable, law-abiding, respectful cultures, societies. I read a very helpful and thought-provoking article about this a few months ago by John Piper. He was writing an article pleading with Christian parents to require obedience of their children. Over and over again, he had watched young children paying absolutely no attention to their parents' requests, and there were no consequences. The children just completely ignored the parents, and there was no consequence. The parent would tell the child to do something once and be ignored, twice ignored, three times ignored, and eventually, after the third disobedience, the parent would laughingly bribe the child, and even that didn't necessarily guarantee obedience. And there were two things in particular that prompted Piper to write that article. The first thing was the killing of 13-year-old Andy Lopez in Santa Rosa, California. Andy Lopez was shot by the police because they thought that he was about to shoot them with an assault rifle. Now, it turned out that it was a toy gun. But the police told the boy twice to drop the gun, and he didn't. Instead, he turned the gun on the police, and so they fired, and he was killed. Now, Piper admitted, as he writes this article, that he doesn't know the details. He doesn't know if Andy Lopez heard the police's commands. But he was simply asking the question, what if? What if he heard the police and he chose simply to do what he had been doing all his life, which was to defy authority? So that was the first thing that prompted Piper to write this article. The second prompt came afterwards on a plane journey. And he says, I watched a mother preparing her son to be shot. Very provocative way to put it, but he was thinking of the Andy Lopez incident. And he said, on that plane, I watched a mother preparing her son to be shot. What was it that she was doing? Well, it was a boy of 7, Piper says, who was playing on his electronic tablet. The stewardess announced that all electronic devices should be turned off in preparation for takeoff, and the boy didn't turn it off, and the mother didn't make him turn it off. As the flight attendant walked past, she told the boy, you need to turn that off, and she kept moving on down the plane. The boy didn't turn it off, and his mother didn't make him. The third time the flight attendant came, she stood over him and told him that he needed to give the device to his mother. At that point, he turned it off. As soon as the flight attendant took her seat, the boy turned the device back on and kept it on all through the takeoff. And the mother watched this and did nothing. And Piper says, I thought to myself, she is training him to be shot by the police. She's teaching her son at the age of 7, you don't have to listen. You don't have to do what people in authority tell you to do. And that's why this fifth commandment is so fundamental. It's crucial for building a stable society where people honour and respect and obey those in authority over them. We are to teach our children from their youngest age that you must obey those in authority over you. You must do what mummy and daddy tell you to do, you boys and girls. You must do what your parents tell you to do. You don't have a choice. You have to do what they tell you to do. You have to do it without complaining. You have to do it without arguing. You have to do it without delaying. That's why this fifth commandment comes first. That's why it is so important. It's so crucial for building a stable society. You know that Jesuit saying, give me the child and I will give you the man. We ignore this commandment. We neglect this commandment at our peril. And that is exactly what our nation has done, isn't it? They have tampered with the foundation. And they've thought that there won't be any consequences at fiddling about with the family, changing the family. But there are consequences. Just because the building didn't collapse immediately doesn't mean that irreparable damage hasn't been done. The process is gradual. The process is imperceptible. It's a creeping thing. Once rot gets into the foundations, the building doesn't collapse immediately. It may take years and years to become noticeable. It may take decades before it becomes noticeable, before the building actually falls. But it will fall unless somehow the rot in the foundation can be stopped. Friends, we are at the stage now where the damage has been done. We can't turn the clock back 50 years. And so we need to pray, we need to plead for the supernatural intervention of God in mercy upon our nation. And we need to start, if we haven't started, putting these things in place in our own families now. The priority of the commandment. Then secondly, let's think about the principle of the commandment. The principle of the commandment. What is the principle taught here in the fifth commandment? Well, obviously the primary application is that we should honour our parents. We should respect them. We should obey them. We should show them honour. But this commandment is broader than just referring to our natural biological parents. The principle of the fifth commandment is that we should honour all who are set in authority over us. And if you haven't read it before, then I commend to you our larger catechism on the commandments. It is a fantastic treasure trove of help in understanding what the commandments mean and don't mean and how to interpret them. And let me tell you what it says about this commandment. In larger catechism, question 124, the question is, who are meant by father and mother in the fifth commandment? And the answer is not only natural parents. Now, of course, it is natural parents. It is first and foremost natural parents. But the catechism says not only natural parents, but all superiors in age and gifts, and especially such as by God's ordinance are over us in place of authority, whether in family, church, or commonwealth. So this commandment does not just apply to your biological parents. It applies to all those who are over you, especially in authority in the family, in the church, and in the nation. The Bible uses the word father to refer to these different positions of authorities. Kings are described as fathers in the Old Testament. Prophets and elders and masters are called fathers in the Bible. And so, although the main application here must be to natural biological parents, it's legitimate to see this commandment applied to everyone set over us under God's authority. And to give the due honour that those gifts or that position entitles to every man and every woman. So, in other words, this commandment has something to say to us about our attitude and our behaviour towards government officials. It speaks to us about our attitude to and our behaviour towards the taxman, and to health and safety inspectors, and to the police. I'm sure Stephen will be delighted to hear that. And to judges. It relates to elders in the church. It has something to say to us about our attitude to CY leaders and Sabbath school teachers. It applies to your teachers in school, boys and girls, to your prefects and to your headmasters. And the principle of this commandment is that we are to honour all those who are in authority over us. And the fact that those in authority are described here using parental language teaches us something about our attitude towards those in authority. We're to treat them as fathers and mothers. That means that we are not to have a resentful and surly and grudging obedience towards them. We are to honour our fathers and our mothers. Again, the larger catechism is very helpful. Question 125 asks, why are superiors called father and mother? And the answer is, superiors are called father and mother both to teach them in all duties towards their inferiors, like natural parents, to express love and tenderness to them, and to work inferiors to a greater willingness and cheerfulness in performing their duties to their superiors as to their parents. It tells us something about the way we're meant to feel towards those who are in authority over us. It's no coincidence that they're described using parental language. Their role in their authority over us, whether it's elders in the church or police or judges or rulers, their role is that of protector, that of helper, that of educator. And it's our duty as inferiors to honour them with love and with affection as well as with obedience. God requires us to honour those who are set over us in authority. And it might be a helpful thing, especially for the children and the young people, to go away today and to make a list of all the authority figures in your life. Who are the people that God has set in authority over you? And what does it look like for you to honour them, just like you honour your father and your mother? The priority of the commandment, the principle of the commandment, and then last of all, the promise of the commandment. The promise of the commandment. The Apostle Paul quotes the fifth commandment in Ephesians 6, verses 2 and 3, and he says that it's the first commandment with a promise. Now, as it happens, it's the only of the Ten Commandments that has a promise attached. Paul is probably thinking of the Ten Commandments as an introduction to and a summary of all the law that God gave to Moses at Sinai. And in amongst that law, there are lots of promises. But this is the first one that has a promise. And this promise is given as an added incentive to us to do what the commandment tells us to do. Well, what is the promise? Well, we've got it there in Exodus 20, verse 12. Honour your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. Moses puts it slightly differently in Deuteronomy 5:16. He says, honour your father and mother so that you may live long and that it may go well with you in the land the Lord your God is giving you. And when Paul quotes it in Ephesians 6, he changes it just a little bit because he wants to apply it not just to the Jews in 1400 BC who were entering into the promised land of Canaan, but he wants to make it applicable to everyone everywhere. And he says, honor your father and mother so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth, not just in Canaan, in the promised land for the Jews, but that you will enjoy long life on the earth. That's the promise. Now, this promise does not mean that you are guaranteed that you will have old age if you are obedient children. It doesn't mean that you will live to the age of 100. It doesn't mean that God, if you are an obedient child who honors your father and mother, it doesn't mean that God is going to supernaturally alter your biology so that you will live for a long, long time, that you will never get sick or have an illness. It's not that people who die young didn't honor their parents. That's not how it works. This promise is a general principle for the individual and for society. It's a real promise, but it's a general, it's not an ironclad guarantee of long life, but it is a general principle for you as an individual and for our society. Let me explain what I mean. A child who honors his parents by respecting them, by listening to their warnings and their advice, the sort of child who listens to their parents' experience and puts their advice into practice, children like that tend not to make a mess of their lives. They tend not to get into bad company. They tend not to do drugs or abuse alcohol or spend their money foolishly and wastefully. They tend to eat well and live sensibly. They tend to respect authority. If they're told to do something by the police, they will immediately comply. And all of that conspires to produce a happy life, doesn't it? It will go well with them. They will enjoy life on the earth. Whereas children who ignore the good, wise, sensible advice and the loving guidance of their parents, children like that wreck their lives. And very often their lives are cut short, tragically, by excessive and wild lifestyles. So it's a general promise for us as individuals. But it's also true for the whole society. Just think for a moment what the world would be like if everyone lived out the fifth commandment. Wouldn't the world be a wonderful place? Everyone's life, everyone's quality of life would be improved. It would be prolonged. The quality of life would increase exponentially. And that brings us back to what we said at the beginning. The family is fundamental to a healthy society. If everyone kept the fifth commandment, we would have a society where people respected the elderly. There wouldn't be muggings and break-ins. You wouldn't need to be afraid to walk out in the streets after dark. As one writer puts it, if we build a society where old age has a place of honor, we can hope to enjoy that place ourselves one day. In other words, we will live long and fare well in the land. Authority would be given its proper respect and obedience. Crime rates would plummet. Antisocial behavior would stop altogether. Schools would become places of learning instead of an exercise in crowd control, as so many of them currently are. And better educated children would lead to more productive adult members of society. And that would filter its way through into all the different levels and aspects of society, into the arts and the media, into science, into politics. And the wholesale result of all of that is that it would go well with us and we would enjoy life, long life, on the earth. Don't you just wish that the policymakers in Westminster and Stormont, if it gets up and running again, could see this. That they're marginalizing and damaging the family to the cost of the whole nation. It needs to be strengthened and protected and ring-fenced, doesn't it, by legislation, not attacked and undermined. This promise comes from God. It's a reality. And it needs to be heard. It needs to be claimed because it is urgently needed today. And I wonder if we here today, Christians as we are, I wonder, are we convinced of the importance of this commandment? Those of us who are parents, those of us who are children, we are all children of someone. Are we convinced of the importance of this commandment? Have we perhaps downgraded it in our thinking? We would never have put it in the place that God puts it. But He knows best. He knows that it is fundamentally important to the well-being of our families, of us as individuals, and of our whole nation. The health and the prosperity of society depends on the values that are taught to children in the home. And if we teach our children to honor and to respect and obey not just their parents, but all in authority over them, then our society would be a wonderful place. And we can make a little microcosm of it, a little colony of this kind of society, can't we, here in the church. We may not be able to influence all of society. It'd be wonderful if it was the case, if God sent revival and suddenly thousands and thousands were converted and people started to honor their parents and this began to filter out into society. But whether God does that or not, we can create that kind of society here in the church. And in fact, that's exactly what God calls us to do. That's what the church is, God's new society, a little outpost of heaven here on earth. And so whatever the world might be like, we here in Trinity, in our congregation, we can make this a place where children honour their parents. And where adults and children honour their elders, not just the elderly, but their elders over them in the church, and respect the authority of the elders and the deacons. And where Sabbath school teachers and leaders in the church are given the respect and the honour that God calls us to give them. What a wonderful place our congregation would be. In large measure, what a wonderful place our congregation is, because these things are happening. But let's work by the grace of God to see these things happen more and more, that we may live long and fare well on the earth. Amen.